while. So, but we can cover a little bit and then go into questions if you want, or just see where we go. I don't really care. I know that we said we would get around to those, and it seems like it's been a little while. So, now would be as good a time of any as any.
I don't know. I haven't noticed any huge controversies this week, unless I've just been like preoccupied with other things.
Yeah. There's the bus.
You guys. We're recording now.
Good.
Cool. Let's
do this.
Can you hear me now? Okay. I don't remember which one of these questions we've already asked.
The next question is, should we get old What's-His-Face in here since he was part of the Gen Con thing, or just forget about him?
Who's old What's-His-Face?
Well, if I could remember,
Mike Shea? Talking about Mike Shea.
Oh, man. We're starting off great. If he's available.
What's-His-Face.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I may have been imbibing today, so.
Really?
May have. I like how you try to leave it vague, but it's painfully obvious what the actual truth is.
Didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
On a next very special episode of the Dungeon Masters Roundtable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, it's up to you guys. You guys can get him in if you want him. I don't really care.
Well, I wasn't at the Gen Con thing, and he was, so I'll take his place on the question.
There you go.
Sorry.
There you go.
Episode.
Good to go.
We've now figured it out. We've got our shit together. Let's go.
And then, and so if that's controversial, then anybody who has a problem with that can make a comment and call in, and we'll put you on the air. How about that?
That's right. That's right. We share the phone number. We have one phone number now, right?
Even start that. I don't know what the phone number is. I'll have to look it up.
I thought you had a thing on your desk.
Five,
cleaned off my desk a long time ago.
4G4E, it's like 366 something.
So
what you do is you go back and you listen to an old episode of 4Geeks4E, get the phone number, and then you call in. Have you even checked that voicemail? I mean, we could have like a bunch of voicemail.
It notifies me when we get a voicemail. Okay. There are no voicemails there.
I was going to say somewhere in a dark closet, there's a little red light that's flashing.
Yeah. No, the website went down this morning because TweetBlender caused a problem with my host, and they took all my websites offline, and I had to call them up and frantically figure out what was going on. And they were really awesome, actually. I want to give props to Bluehost, because they once he told me what it was, he said, here's what you have to do to fix it, and then we can throw it back online. And it was like 5 minutes after I fixed.
Nice.
So yeah, it was really good. I can't open the website because I'm recording, so I'll, if somebody wants to go to the website and look up the number, it's at the bottom of each post.
What was our website again?
4geeks4e.com. Nice. I know, but you've been imbibing, so I don't know if you're serious or you really,
All right, I'm almost there. (347) 640-4G4E. Or 347-640-4443.
All right.
Yeah, how do you like that? apples, them apples. That
how do you like that? Those, them
apples.
Some apples, yeah. In the bucket. Yeah.
All
right. Who's got the questions?
Well, Tracy said that there was some internet stuff going on. I want to know what that is first.
The big news is that it's Jeff Grinder's birthday today.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So skipping that.
Hey, wait, is he online? Nice. Pop
Jeff Griner.
We can sing happy birthday to him and then cut him off.
It shows that he's like, let's try to add him. Let's
see if we can. Oh, if it shows him away, he's usually away.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Jeff Griner. There we go. We'll see if he hears the call and comes running.
He's probably
nope. No,
he's not
going
to
answer.
No.
Oh well. Tracy, why don't you just sing for him right now anyway?
No, there's no I won't get any bonuses or anything like that, so no.
I'll pay in Skittles this weekend.
way more souls than I have.
Wow. She had to think about it.
She's thinking about it.
No, I don't need Skittles this weekend.
Hey, Jeff Griner. Happy birthday.
Oh, God. The mental image.
Happy birthday, Podfather Griner. Happy birthday to you.
Hey,
there you go. So, that's what you get.
So,
happy birthday.
Do we want to talk about news first?
Who's the what now?
Sure, news. What? What's in the news?
There's a new Legends and Lore column. Mm-hmm. About magic items.
Okay. Is that by you?
No.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Monty just handed over the rings.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I'm taking over.
I was open.
D&D now. So, yeah. No. So this one was about magic items, which is kind of cool.
I don't think I read that one today, but then I don't get it at work, so I have to wait until I come home to actually read the articles.
He actually described one of the reasons that I had problems, and that actually a lot of people had problems with them putting all the magic items in the player's handbook and making them a part of the math of player advancement, and how it's a problem. But, yeah. I don't know. So, as you probably all know, I'm a stingy DM, so I don't give magic items like the book says you should, because I want them to be special. And that's sort of what he says is the biggest benefit, is that they end up being special. But he also sort of describes something kind of different from that by really making them kind of have no mechanical anything and just sort of have story stuff. And I don't go that far. But he's also not really explicit about it. And I think his sort of first few articles are going to be a little tenuous and slightly vague, just because of the 5e rumors surrounding his addition.
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten
that team. Yeah,
I've forgotten about that part with the Margaret Weiss thing. So.
Yeah.
Well, people were saying it from the first day of Mike Merles' announcement, because.
Oh, yeah.
Monty Cook famously sort of doesn't like 4th edition. He really eschewed 4th edition. And I mean, the man wrote the Pathfinder core rulebook introduction and basically said, this is the real D&D. 4th edition is not D&D. So to have him added to the 4E team sort of sends a big message. And so...
Well, I mean... It
could be that Monty just took 3 years to drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, or you could say they said, hey, you know, come help us lead up R&D and, you know, put your money where your mouth is. You say you don't like 4th edition, help us fix it. Because, I mean, that's kind of what he's been talking about. His job is to just, you know, go and brainstorm ideas for, you know, a new kind of growth and expansion of 4th edition, right? I mean...
Hey, I'm not out. I'm just saying yeah. what the general sort of things I've been reading are. So, I was not touting my own personal opinion. But Thaddeus, you're right. There, you could look at it from several different points of view. Now, what, Tracy? Sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh no, I was going to say they. As far as I can tell, they haven't said though that it's to support 4th edition. They've said it's to support D&D.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah, well, so my personal thing about that particular topic is that's because there will be no 5th edition. What you're going to get is perpetual D&D that is a mostly digital product that will be editionless, so to speak, because it's just going to have errata and be supported predominantly online with digital offerings, and so therefore you might have a few core books that get updated occasionally, but most things are going to be online. So when things change a great deal, it's not going to be a new edition. It's just going to be same old D&D, but here we're making some changes that are improving the game.
And Pathfinder is doing this too, in a way. I mean, that I know would they be... were looking at what?
I was just going to be. That would be so nice if that's really the direction that it took. Because
yeah, I just noticed with Pathfinder that they're rewriting some of the rules. Like how stealth works and stuff like that, and they're including them as optional rules, but after a point, how is that different?
Well, the reason that Pathfinder is slightly different is because D&D is, I mean, you're right, in principle it's kind of the same, but D&D, because so much of it is online and because they rely heavily, and a lot of players rely heavily on the character builder, for instance, and you really, when you use the character builder, you cannot deviate from what's in the character builder. There is no customization available there. So if they change something and you make your character with the character builder, you are building that change into your character. Whereas with Pathfinder, they don't have a specific, you know, Paizo official character builder where it incorporates every single rule and all the updates, and so therefore when you make a character, you always have to use whatever rule. You actually do still have a choice.
Well, I mean, that all comes down to how Wizards ends up implementing character changes, not necessarily that's actually different. But yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the way that they're implementing it now and the way that they have been doing it so far has not implemented things and made them optional. It implements them and says, okay, here's the rule, here's how it works. Yep. So I'm just going by
the way they're going. I wouldn't be surprised to see that change.
I wouldn't. Well, at this point, nothing would surprise me. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see it change, but I also would not be surprised to not see it change. Because they still want to differentiate themselves and their brand. So they still, you know, they still want to make it so that you're playing their game. Even though it's the game you want to play and the way you want to play it, you're still playing their game.
Right. And I got to say, I'm excited. I would be excited to see kind of an evergreen D&D where they're basically, we can avoid future edition wars by, you know, no more 5e or 6e or... And we can keep our podcast name the same and not have to change it in the future.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I hate to drop in the historical perspective, but AD&D, the first edition, was, oh, I don't know, 15 years old. And every time they released a new setting or a new, or a new monster manual or something, I mean, they continued to add rules to it, but it was still the first edition. I mean, Unearthed Arcana came out, a whole big book that introduced things like Cavaliers and Barbarians and all this other stuff. It wasn't no new edition. It was just additional stuff, and they just kept piling it on until finally they had the legal shakeup or whatever, and then out of that arose second edition and stuff. So, you know, I would love to – I think that's the way they'll go back to doing it.
Yeah.
And honestly, I have to kind of agree with Sam. As like, I don't think we're going to see a fifth edition.
Right.
But you'll continue to see piling on, if you
will. In 15 years, we're all still playing D&D, you know, editionless, you know, what is now the current edition of D&D, that'd be fine by me.
So while I agree, Randall, with your historical perspective, of course, because I'm also somewhat of a historian, The difference there, though, is exactly what I said makes the difference between Pathfinder and 4th edition right now, other than the, of course, mechanical system differences, is that 4th edition, they have really pushed hard for people to be using their online character builder. And the way that the system works, it really is bolstered by that, and that makes making characters easy to build and easy to generate and all that kind of stuff. And people start relying on that. As soon as you do that, you rely on it, and it becomes part of your game. And first edition didn't have all that because you didn't have this giant character builder. You didn't have something that incorporated new rules into it, you know, as you went. You just, if a book came out and you liked the book and you liked the way the rule was presented in the book, you could add it to your game or not. It was your choice. Whereas, just like I said, the character builder makes those things not a choice at this point.
Yeah, I think you'll see that that's going to change some. I actually think that that tool will evolve as much as the rules do. And as folks, I know one of the things that they're using for it now is a marketing tool. I mean, they can track what characters are being played.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've logged them onto their system, so they can tell you, and they can generate content based on those needs.
Which is awesome, because that means that
I have two thoughts. Yes, let me complete my thought, Thad, but you're right. I mean, yes, it's awesome from a business standpoint. I think it's a little disingenuous as far as I don't like marketing, period. And so when marketing touches anything, it's like necrotic damage. as far as I'm concerned.
But see, marketing, I think about the fact that these numbers can be tracked for R&D purposes. So if there's a race that's not being played, like, you know, let's look at the Wilden, right? So say no one's playing the Wilden. You know, they look at the number of characters that have been played over the, or made over the last year, and they see, you know, like 6% or less are Wilden. What they can do is they can look at, you know, R&D can look at one of two roads. They say, we can either do something for the Wilden that'll make it actually an enjoyable race to play, or we can basically do our best to just cut it out. I mean, if it's, you know, they can cut out what doesn't work, or they can fix what doesn't work because they have the numbers to support it. Now, yeah, you know, if they're using it just to market it so they can cram stuff down their our throats, like, oh, people really like Paladins, so let's really play up the Paladin angle. Whatever. I'm just thinking that if R&D can use these numbers, then we get a better game out of it. Yeah.
Well, I would hope for good. I would hope for good, yes.
But we have questions to cover, and I think we've gone down this road of theory crafting about the future edition of Dungeons and Dragons, and that can be something that'll eat up hours and hours. So.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Okay. We didn't, but what we didn't talk about was that Margaret Weiss went on her forums at Margaret Weiss Productions and made some comment basically that was, well, Monty Cook is working on
pretty much mission. Called him out,
Sam. And all of his friends know it is sort of what she said, so there's several different lines of discussion there. One of them is what Newbie DM said was, I'm not sure how I feel about an industry professional posting on a professional, you know, company website forum about another company, another employee.
I kind of wonder what would drive her to be like that. That's, I mean, that almost sounds spiteful.
She didn't do it in a spiteful way. I read the thread. It was only 3 pages long, and it sort of wasn't even really related to that. She just sort of popped in and responded to an offhand comment of one of the other. Now, I haven't read the thread in 2 days, so maybe it's bigger now since it got a lot of news. But
what was the day and time of her post?
Oh Lord, I don't know. I didn't say that.
Well, no,
I
have a reason for asking that question.
I think it was Monday, wasn't
it?
I couldn't tell you. I really couldn't. To be honest, I read it more as a curiosity than something I'm extremely interested in. I have a lot of respect for Margaret Weiss, but I just wanted to see what everybody was talking about, and I've been extremely slammed at work, so I didn't really register it all that well. I think it's something that's funny. You know, if that's the case, fine. I'm not sure how I feel about the professionalism of it either, but on the other hand, who knows what's going on in the minds of some of these people. She may or may not have inside information, or may or may not have misunderstood something, or may or may not have been given the okay to sort of seed the undercurrent, right? I mean, who knows? We don't know what's going on, but I actually thought it was funny, and I thought several people would actually find it funny because, you know, people were already talking about, oh, Monty Cook's back, that must mean 5e. And she's just sort of poking the fire and, you know, stoking the flames, and that kind of thing happens. You know, that's part of the internet. It was a little curious to see it from Margaret Weiss, but, you know, whatever. I laughed and I closed the thread, and it wasn't a big deal. So, you know, I can imagine that if it wasn't planned or okayed, that some people got their ears boxed. But, you know, whatever.
Well, I apparently had forgotten about it. So, I mean, I remember Newbie's tweet about it, and then it was like, oh, here we go, 5e again, blah, blah. And then I kind of just went and went black and dark on it, so.
Yeah.
But.
Well, if 5e comes out, I'm going to have to come out of retirement and get a job so I can afford all the new books. But other than that...
Yeah, it's important to have goals, Dad.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff Greiner came online.
Yeah, let's see if we can ambush him.
What do you people want?
All right, hit it, Tracy.
I can't sing.
Oh, come on.
I already sang to him.
All right, Sam. On two, Sam. One, two. Happy birthday. Are you going to make me drunk sing? All right. Well, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Jeff Greiner! Happy birthday to you.
Is that the
I got it right?
Yeah.
I thought I was
going to
mess up the song.
That was fantastically lame.
my solo rendition is much better, Jeff. You'll hear it on the podcast later.
Yeah, I blame my backup singers more than anything.
Randall's version, you're going to imagine him pushing his man boobs together and dancing.
I pictured white flowing dress. And
it's hot. It's hot.
Are you recording an episode now?
Yeah,
you're on the air, man.
Wow, this is like the second time ever.
No, it's like the third. Please. You came on and did your How Now to Grow a BMO thing too. So that was.
Speaking of which, coming up in November. Everybody should go hownotogrowbmo.org.
All right,
November 1st.
How much did you raise last year?
It was over $200 that I raised, and it was several thousand as a group.
Congratulations. So we got enough to beat then, somewhere over $200.
Something like that, yeah. So this year we're going to get over $300.
All right.
And my beard will be more epic than ever.
Now, no starting ahead of time, right?
No, everybody shaves on day one.
Okay.
In fact, any of you are welcome to participate as well.
Grow a beard is a minor action?
Right.
All right.
I can grow a beard as a free action.
Yeah, that's Randall.
So what are you guys talking about tonight?
We were just doing the news, and then we're going to answer some questions that we had that we received in writing at the live DMR at Gen Con. So
I was there.
Yes, you were.
Yes, you were.
You recorded it.
Jeff, do you have any follow up questions you'd like to ask then?
Follow up questions.
Anything that's been hanging there for 2 months, just wish they'd get around to answering.
Yeah.
I vaguely recall this incident where I tried to participate at one point and Thaddeus shut me down and then let everybody else in the room talk.
that was pretty much what happened. I don't remember.
I wish you would have told me, Jeff, because I could have totally edited in your actual, whatever you wanted to say when we released that.
All I was concerned about is shutting down Jeff and Fred. Fred dominated.
It was his podcast.
Yeah. Having Fred on is like having two Mike Shays.
Has everybody clued Tracy into the fact that we're basically doing a Tome Show DMR on Monday?
No, I was going to tell her about it when we were in Seattle.
Yeah, all three of you are going to be on except Tracy.
Yep.
Yeah, that's because I will be partying it up in Seattle. Biatches.
Yep. Whoa.
Oh, you just wait for Seattle, Tracy. I've got plans. I've got surprises in store for you.
God. You know, this is supposed to be a nice, relaxing con.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They all are till I show up.
Yeah.
It's freaking Geek Girl Con. I'm gonna walk in and be like, ladies.
Oh my god.
And he's gonna be wearing a dress.
Yep.
Before I go, guys,
yeah.
One more bit of news that I'm sure you haven't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Today it was announced that Apple is buying D&D. Go.
See, what's great about this is that Apple's about design. You know, they try to take everything, every possible hurdle to adoption out of the game.
Yeah.
You know,
they also go for fewer buttons. So.
I think
the PH will also cost $800.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay.
It will look so sick, and it'll be small.
It won't matter how many editions they release, because all the early adopters will go snatch it up on the first day.
Yep.
Oh, it'll be matte black covers with thick, glossy white pages and beautiful artwork.
But
there'll
be lots of in-app purchases. You can count on that.
Guys, every picture of Guy Gax will have Steve Jobs' head photoshopped in.
If you would like to use this power for your character, it's only 99 cents.
That's right.
There you go.
Oh man!
Thanks for the birthday wishes. Yeah. I gotta go.
And later, Jeff.
Have a good night, man.
Bye.
Happy birthday, man.
Yeah.
Did that just seriously end the call?
Yep, it sure did. Hold on.
What the heck?
Okay, now I'm recording again.
Wow, yeah, way to go. Way to go, Skype.
No, it's because he's on a Mac. It happens every time I record with him. It's because he's on a Mac, and for whatever reason, none of the recording programs I've ever used are able to handle whatever signal is sent when his Mac drops.
Right,
damn,
but I
you,
was
Steve Jobs.
Yeah. I was hosting the call.
Yeah, but it, yeah, but dude. I know I'm just saying like that has happened to me with a lot of different people with Macs.
Jeez,
Tracy, aren't you on a Mac?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and a lot of times when she drops or whatever, it also drops me.
Whatever.
Wow. Yeah.
So from now on, we'll just blame Tracy for all of our connection issues.
Let's blame Jeff Greiner.
Yeah.
You're supposed to blame the person that's not Greiner. Here. You can't blame the person that's sitting at the table with us.
Yeah. So you want to climb that wall, huh? The athletic skill is only 99 cents.
That's right.
That will get you to Grandmaster.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Wow. Don't even get me started on that.
Wow. Yeah.
So, do we want to do questions now?
Yeah, let's do that.
Sure.
Okay. The first one is from Micah. I think this is from Obsidian Portal.
Yeah.
Hi, Micah.
All hey, right. Micah.
How can we get started faster? Less chit-chat, YouTube videos, and TV discussions. Sometimes we BS for an hour or more. I don't know if we can help him.
Didn't we answer that one?
I don't know, but I felt
answered that something like that.
Well, it's Micah, so yeah, I'm not sure we can.
Repeating.
You know, it's a question that he has to deal with internally. His love of chatting with people is sort of like I don't want to take that away from him, so I refuse to give advice on how to end that.
I will. You have to learn how to be a dick. I mean, you have to. You have to be able to say the game starts now, and if it doesn't start, then you need to start penalizing people for it.
But if he's the GM and he's the one chatting,
well,
that's what I'm saying.
Then you need to get your players to be a dick and give them some kind of authority over him. I don't know. You can do what I think it was Newbie DM once wrote about or talked about, that he has kind of like intermissions, and you know, if you're going to chat and talk, you step away from the table, you do your chat and talk time. But as soon as you sit down to the table, like there's a group understanding that there's no chit chatting going on. And then, you know, if you guys need a break to get up and chit chat some more, take an intermission, get up, get away from the table. And
see, I control the environment. I don't allow laptops. Pads are okay because they're small, but I don't allow laptops. And we're in the basement, and there's no TV, there's no YouTube, there's no radio, there's nothing that is an external distraction from what's going on in front of you on the table. So I have a controlled environment, and I think I would do that even if I wasn't playing in the basement. I would find a room that had none of those things in it to make it understood that when, like, you're going into a conference room. When you're going to a conference room, it's expected that your cell phone is at least on, you know, inaudible or whatever. And you're not always checking Twitter. And I don't know how your business meetings are, but I know in ours, if I was on Twitter the whole time while I was in a meeting, I would get my ass chewed. So, you know, there's just certain expected behavior when you're in that situation, in that meeting. And that's how I run my D&D games. So, you know, that's.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I don't allow computers and whatnot at the table. And if somebody pulls out their phone when it's, you know, like if it's not their turn and they decide they're getting bored and they pull out their phone and start, like, playing Angry Birds or something, I get pissed.
Yeah,
because it's like, you know, if it's not your turn, that doesn't mean that you don't have to pay attention.
Right.
Like, you should be paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah,
But my point was, it's Micah. Like, if he's chatting, you know, you don't just go, oh, you know what, Micah, I love what you're saying, but I'm going to stop you mid-sentence and we're going to play now, okay? Shut up and sit down.
Yeah, but if he wants to get – if his desire is truly to want to get started faster, it's just got to happen.
His own willpower issue. He's going to have to say, okay, we start at 6:05, and then at 6:05 he needs to start the game no matter what.
Well, I think, like I said,
even if it's not Micah's – even if Micah at – the question is still valid even if it's
Micah's. Oh, I know. I think the
idea of doing a table culture is kind of valid. They, you know, like they say that if you're having trouble falling asleep, you don't stay in bed for more than 15 minutes because you don't want to get yourself used to being awake in bed. But you don't talk at the table because you don't want your group being used to talking at the table. You build that culture someplace else, and then you have a table culture that is no, you know, no holding up the game.
Yeah. Tracy, what do you think?
I think that we're the wrong podcast to ask that question to.
Stop chit-chatting? Yeah, we know how to do that, totally.
Yeah, totally.
Here's whenever we go over the 2.5 hour mark.
Yeah, I mean, having table rituals, that's the end of this time. We continue on. And then occasionally, you know, you're just going to have to let it go because your players might really need it. They might have had a really bad day at work or something. Mm-hmm. You want me to go to the next question?
Sure.
Lucas Shashek, I think is how you say it. Sure. Do you use...
Hey, Lucas.
Hi, Lucas.
Hey, look, we're trying
he's
to, you know...
He's probably waving his iPod right now.
I'm sure he is, yeah.
Hi, guys.
Sure.
Do you use any random mechanics other than dice, i.e. in the RPGs using Jenga or tarot decks?
Do I do it in D&D? No. But I have played other games that use those.
I have in the past. I have not had the occasion to. Occasionally, a deck of cards is a really handy thing to have at the table.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I I've used it in the past in D&D, but I just haven't had a case to in recent history, so...
Yep, I use different things that I usually design for my games, like the Madness deck that I designed a while ago, and then there's also the deck that came with the Shadowfell. And that one's fun, and that's, you know, that's kind of random stuff. And then I'm currently designing a new random deck of stuff for my game that is awesome.
So I'm not directly disagreeing with you, but that's sort of a different kind of random. I think the question was about a randomizer. So the way Jenga is it randomly, you know, you have to perform something in order to fail or succeed at a task in the game, like when you roll a die, you have a target number that you have to beat and then you fail or succeed. And Jenga, you have to pull a block, and if the tower falls, you failed. And with cards, you might, you know, with like a deck of cards, you might have to draw, like in Savage Worlds, you use a deck of cards and you have to draw and it tells you, you know. So that's
no,
a random.
I don't use that kind of stuff.
What you're describing are like random effects in the game that have a mechanical benefit or problem, right? So.
Right. No, I don't use that stuff.
We use the Jenga in the... drinking D&D at
Gen
Con.
Yeah, we did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah. And I kicked Trevor Kidd's ass. Wow.
That was fun.
I was very inebriated.
And, you know, one of these days I needed to build an adventure to where that I utilize that, because, boy, that crap does build suspense.
Yeah.
If you know something terrible is going to happen if that tower falls, and after each action or after certain specific actions... you remove a piece of that tower. Oh man!
Well, that's
yet to use it, but I so got to.
have you played Dread? Because
no,
the
I have
whole
not.
Because
I want to, but I
all the actions in the game are based on the Jenga tower, and
yeah.
And there are certain rules around when you pull and who has to pull and all that. But basically, when the tower falls, someone will die.
Yeah.
Now, who it is determined in a different way, but you know.
Well, that's yeah, cool. And in this game, it was an entire reality ceased to be.
Oh, jeez. Nice.
That's right.
Yeah, pretty much.
Gamma World. Gamma World 1, bitches.
Next question? Yeah,
next question.
Yeah, let's go to the next one.
Amy Aiken? Or Aiken?
Hi, Amy.
How do you introduce or deal with permanent changes to a player character, such as losing a limb, having children, death of a loved one?
Oh, I got to jump all over this one. Sorry, guys. This happened. Hardly ever get that enthusiastic, but I...
Randall
but
was
I
jumping
was just,
up and down.
I really was. I was just talking about this with my DM, where I am an assassin in his campaign. Well, a fellow player of mine, he got stuck in some lava for a brief time, and while it did not kill him, it the DM felt that there should be some kind of permanent damage involved, and he was really weighing this on his head because the player that this happened to is kind of a power gamer, and he was worried that the player would be upset for taking something away from him, And we talked about it. We had lunch together and we talked about this. And what we came up with, and what he'd pretty much decided to do already, and I was just kind of helping him along, is that he might do something like, for example, take a movement point away from him, but at the same time maybe give him resist 5 fire. So that you are hurting, I mean, you're taking away one aspect that's story related through a mechanical means, like reducing his movement rate, because his legs were in lava. Obviously he's going to have severe injuries to his legs, so that's going to impair his movement. But at the same time, to help build story and to make it feel like he's not punishing the character, he gave him resist 5 fire. Or this was what we were leading towards as we left lunch. He may have changed it up since then. But and I think that's a really good thing to do. I may have done it a little differently, or maybe have changed it a little bit. Or if the player didn't want or offered 2 or 3 things that could happen to the player. But that trade-off kind of thing is, I think, a good way to do it. That was a recent discussion I had in real life, and so that was kind of apropos.
So, go ahead, Thaddeus.
I was just going to say, I would have turned that guy into Darth Vader.
I like what Randall said, and I think that it makes a lot of sense. And so I have two things to say. The first one is, I wonder how that player, if that player was really upset or how they dealt with it. And if that player was someone, so was that PC a PC that really relied on a lot of movement and mobility? Because if not, then that's still devastating to take away like a point of speed or whatever. But it's not extremely devastating because they're not, you know, it doesn't hinder something about their powers, which would be much more devastating. So something to consider, right? If you decide to do something like that, is it going to make the character limp, or is it really going to hobble the character? And I don't know if you really want to hobble the character, depending on the player. Cause if the player can deal with it, and if the player will go with it and role play with it, that's a wonderful thing to do, and let the player have a lot of leeway in role playing. And then, you know, give bonuses for good role playing, and then it sort of will alleviate even more. And the other players will see, oh, you know, they're really going with this. It's become like a center point of the story at a certain leg of the journey or whatever. And that can be really fun. If you have a player that can't really deal with having a mechanical punishment, so to speak, punishment's not the right word, but I can't think of the other one. It's probably a good idea not to force that onto a player before talking to them. Session and be like, oh, well, Joe, you know, your character fell into the pit of lava, and so, you know, you're going to have a -1 to your movement from now on because of your leg damage. That's not fair.
Yeah.
To the player. It's fair to that what you decided was fair, but the way that it was presented is the unfair thing, and so you want to try to stay away from that. And if there's a player that won't really be able to deal with a mechanical disadvantage like that, then tell them, okay, well, this thing happened to your character. You need to step up on the role playing for that, and let the player do it. Let the player change their own character's narrative, even in very tiny ways, because of that situation, and that can actually be a lot of fun too.
Yeah, and I think this is pretty much how he handled it. I was, you know, our DM's pretty decent but young, and so I wanted to, see what he said, and I think he took it the right way. So we'll see what happens the next game session, which is this Friday. But there's another player in the group that if this had happened to, they would have been really upset. It would be like, look, 4E makes no provisions for this kind of damage or this kind of rule. I should suffer any penalties. If I didn't get killed, I didn't get killed. You know, and they would really, they'd take this hard rules line, if you will. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, the player that it happened to wasn't that one. So.
Well, and I would say that any change to a character story-wise or mechanics-wise should be talked about with the player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Before you go messing with their character. I mean, I understand it's shared storytelling, so once you put your character into the game, you're kind of subject to what happens in the story, but, you know.
Yeah.
Don't go effing around with somebody's character just because you can, you know, always present it to them, give them an option. And if, you know, if they have a different idea about how it could go, then be open to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and particularly you could give them a way to eventually get around the quote unquote disadvantage, whether it's mechanical or just something they're supposed to role play out. Mm-hmm. You know, that could give a sidetrack to the game too. That could be fun. But I would definitely work with the player and ask them first what they might like to do.
Yeah, well, if you go up to the player and say, look, you were in lava up to your knees or whatever, that's
and
going
yet
to
you
damage
survived.
You. And while this isn't a simulation game, you would expect some kind of effect to be a result of this action. So, what do you think should happen to your player, or to your character? And, yeah, and I think if you approach it like that, you can come up with a good solution that it makes everybody happy, so... Cool. Next question. All right,
next question.
So this one's from Jeremy Southard, also known as, was it Wastix Games or Wastix Games?
Yep.
Oh, hey, Jeremy.
And the question is, what are some unique ways, this is following up for when the character actually dies instead of only getting maimed, what are some of the unique ways of getting new characters into the game without some troop excuse? How do you introduce a new character?
Ah, so I have the answer to that. Now I'm jumping up and down.
Go for it.
Ben from Ben's RPG Pile and Woo! I wrote, yeah, and I wrote an article for RPG Musings about how to incorporate. He read my cooperative story building post that was from a year ago or whatever, and he really liked it, and he contacted me, and then we wrote a follow up post to that about adding an existing player. To an already established group, an existing PC, to an already established group, whether that player, whether it's a new player or the player and their old character died or whatever, doesn't matter. And so I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But basically, it talks about how, yeah, it might be easy to sort of do the, you know, what is it, the Darkness Rising thing or the gamers thing where they walk out, you look quest worthy, you know, come and join our party or whatever. That's not really realistic, right? Oh, we're walking in this really scary forest and we just happen to come upon this wizard who is lonely and standing here with his staff. And, oh, he needs a party to travel with. Okay, join us. You know, that doesn't really, it's sort of not, at least for me in my games, that would not make sense because of the danger in the world. So we came up with a way to introduce that, spend about, you know, it probably takes a half hour to 40 minutes. You talk with the player about their PC beforehand, of course, and then when you introduce that PC into the party, it becomes a scene and everyone in the party has a stake in that scene. And you describe, you know, different things about the PC and the other PCs, and it gives some example questions to ask and how to get players to role play through that and stuff like that. So you don't just make it a, you know, just like you want to try to, or most people want to try to avoid the, oh, you all meet in a tavern and here now you know, the old man in the corner tells you this tip and now you're off to this fortress, make, you know, fighting orcs or whatever. If you want to stay away from that, then you also want to stay away from that when you're just adding a player to the party too.
Cool.
I say be very careful if any of the characters in the party are a little paranoid. Mm-hmm. Sarah almost got shot with a bow and arrow by the ranger who could hear her in the woods.
Mm.
But no, it's a good idea to talk to talk to the player. And even ask the player, you know, hey, here's the situation. Do you have any ideas? Because I worked with my DM to introduce Sarah because I was joining an existing group. They were right outside the waterfall cave.
You know, I would just advise that actually I don't think I have much for this one. Honestly, it just depends on how well it depends on the story. I mean, if you have a game that's just like a light romp, then who cares? Use a trope. You know, if you've got one that's like hell bent on, you know, maintaining continuity and everybody's, you know, gotta fit their story in properly, then sometimes you gotta make somebody wait, you know, maybe like one session before you can work them in, because you don't want to just kind of jam a square peg into a round hole. So it may, you know, it may not happen until you get to the next plot point. And at that point, I would say, can we, you know, talk it over with the player and say, can we give you an NPC who's already part of the story and make them kind of a bigger role until we can get your character worked into it? And that way it doesn't feel so forced. And they still get to play, they still get to play an interesting part, and they get to play a character that maybe they're not so attached to. So they may have a little more fun being a little wilder, a little more crazy with this NPC. So
who knows? That's a good point. It's a good point. It kind of depends on your group, right?
Right. I mean, in my last group, we were just having a good time and joking around. So it was no problem when someone died. You know, this other guy just kind of walked out of the woods and was like, oh, what are you guys doing? My whole party just died. And we're like, oh, well, you know, we just lost a guy too.
If you want specific examples, you can do things like, have the PCs rescue the new PC, right? The PCs in the party that you know, have them come upon this one lone PC who is being attacked by a big troll or something, and will in fact die if the players don't step in, if the other PCs don't step in and help fight, right?
Except for my group watches him die.
Well, that could actually be a story point though, right? Because then maybe someone saw them do that and confronts them and blames them for, you know, not rescuing that person and then robbing the body, and maybe goes and tells, you know, the family of that adventurer who died, you know, oh, these people robbed your son's body and they have his heirloom necklace that your grandmother had or whatever, you know, and then they're being hunted by, you know, I mean, you could totally do anything you want with that. I mean, it's great. It's a great story maker if they just watch him die too.
Except for the guy who's like, all right, I rolled my new character.
Well, yeah.
It's like, oh, you guys suck. All right, should we go on to the next question?
Sure.
Sure.
So from James.
Hi, James.
Hi, James.
Which James? Is this like Gen Con for James? Or?
I don't know how to pronounce it. T-R-E-U?
True.
Treu.
True.
All right.
James, call in and tell us how to pronounce your last name.
Please. That would be wonderful.
If all of your players came into D&D from WoW, how do you get them away from focusing just on encounters, XP, treasure, rather than the story, campaign setting, flavor, etc.?
Well.
Use shock conditioning. Yeah. Put a big grid on your floor, and every time they do behavior you don't like, shock the hell out of them. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Now, Sam, I've got to tell you that that negative reinforcement has been proven through clinical testing to be far less effective than positive reinforcement.
And that's been proven less effective than actually randomized.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's the whole reason why if you train a dog
both.
And you're less consistent – like, you give them a treat 80% of the time is actually more reinforcing than giving them a treat 100% of the time. Anyway, sorry.
so that means reward them 80% of the time and shock them.
Yes, the other. Well, no, the negative is different.
Well, the negative is just fun. Treat. That's just for you.
Yeah, that's just for you, yeah.
I would, well, and
Trace is probably rolling her eyes.
To answer that question, you have to go back to it depends on the group. Like, if you have a whole table full of people who just want to go swing swords at monsters, and you try to get them into the story and they don't want to have it, then I hate to say it, but it sounds like your game is going to be about killing monsters. Because if it's one DM who wants story and four or five players who don't, you can't really force those guys to do story.
That's going to be tough to do. Now, you can try to weasel it in places, but it's going to be tough to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or gradually work into it. I mean, you could start off the lower levels, you know, of even focusing on setting up the quests like you would in WoW. It's like, well, the local farmer wants you to go out and find, you know, six wolves and kill them and bring them in the pelts, you know. You can still interact. You can still do the role-playing and the interaction with the farmer. You don't have to force them necessarily to do a lot of it. But it can be a gradual process, and eventually they can warm up to more involved role playing stuff. So
well, it's actually it's a matter of there's a, it's actually are they coming from WoW and that's the kind of game they want? They just want to do it on a tabletop instead of on the computer? If that's the case, then if you don't want to run that kind of game, then you've got the wrong group. And you're going to either have to do what Randall and Thaddeus suggested and just, like, don't run the kind of game you really wanted to run. Run a game that the players all want, or try to wean them off of the more WoW-centered kind of thing and get a little role-playing. But it could be that they want or expect the WoW-type play because that's all they know.
Right.
And in that case, if that's the case, then I suggest what Randall said, wean them off of it slowly and onto the more, you know, role-playing-based or role-playing-centered style, role-playing-focused game, and you'll notice if they like it or not. They might not even know if they'll like it or not, and you're going to have to really pay attention to how much they sort of jump in and participate and how excited they get, and whether, you know, some of them might be tentative. They might not understand that they can actually contribute story to the game.
Yeah.
I've totally...
And don't get...
Go ahead, Tracy.
When running for new players at different conventions, I've totally run into the player has no idea that they could do something totally different, like jump on the back of a dragon or, you know, yell obscenities at the dwarf or whatever. And role-playing is a skill that you do have to learn, and you don't usually learn that from games like WoW. So they know how to do this other stuff pretty well because they've played other games that have had it. So this is a big unknown to them, and if you can make it more approachable and less scary, that can also help a lot too. But you've got to know why they're not doing it.
And that is a good point about World of Warcraft not being, and video games in general, not being great teachers of roleplay, because in video games you're pretty limited in the scope of what you can do, and in tabletop roleplaying games you're pretty much not limited, you know, by your powers and you know what you can interact with. And so there is a bit of a learning curve there. But I was going to say, don't be mad if your players end up not liking role playing. You know, it's like, you know, if one of your friends doesn't like your favorite TV show, like Doctor, you know, you find out your friend doesn't like Doctor Who, you can't, you know, make them watch Doctor Who and like it. You know, if it's not their thing. Yeah,
it's aesthetic. Some people like Picasso and some don't. Right.
Right.
I mean, it's.
Right.
But it is a good point about World of Warcraft not introducing you into the real aspects of role play. So, you know, give them.
But there's a third element here we're not really talking about, and I think there's a separate element, and it's called story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that role play is separate than story. And some people will enjoy a good story, but not still want to role play. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe you can have a happy medium of two out of those three. Maybe you have player. Maybe if you can tell a good story, because WoW has a pretty captivating story. And if you get into the lore at all, or listen to a single boss rant along until he does his combat thing, then you've got some of the story, and you can hook your players in that way.
Story in World of Warcraft is for the RP servers. None of us read that crap.
Yeah, well,
hey!
Hey.
I've never played World of Warcraft, so I don't know.
Yeah. But,
listen,
yeah,
I don't like the... What is it? The disease that's going everywhere and making all the creatures act weird and sad? That made me sad.
I have no idea. I'm not.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
We'll see. So
the Abyssal Plague?
What do you mean, shush? I wasn't saying anything.
I'm teasing you.
Tracy's making me cry.
No, it's
I am.
It's what the Abyssal Plague was based on. No, I'm just kidding.
No, is that like the chaos, whatever, in WoW? Like, wasn't there some sort of world-changing event in WoW or something that...
I think this happened afterwards.
Oh.
One of the early things you have to do is, I think I played a druid. I think that's what the class name was. And you have to go and you see that one of the main sacred trees is sick and... You have to try to heal.
Oh, yeah, I remember that story. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What are they called? Oh, not pixies, but other women who fly. Harpies.
Yeah, harpies.
Oh,
yeah.
Near there.
Yeah, you have to kill a bunch of harpies or something.
Yeah.
And get silver strands or something or onks or... I can't remember. It was some kind of torx or something. I can't remember. T-O-R-C. I can't remember
something
what
like
they
that.
Were. Yeah.
So, are we ready for the next question?
Yeah.
Sure.
I know we have a stack of questions. I doubt we'll get through all of them in this one episode. We may have to.
Michael, the online DM.
Hey, Michael.
Right. Hey, online DM was there. Awesome.
Yeah.
What's up, dude?
What would you suggest as a good trap or obstacle in a skill challenge for PCs invading the lair of a beholder with Drow Duergar? I don't know how to pronounce that.
Duergar?
In the Underdark. Duergar, in the Underdark.
I don't know if that's right.
A trap in the Underdark?
Yeah.
Spin a wheel.
Wow.
Yeah.
Although with beholders, my first thought comes to mind, vertical shafts.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe random gusts of air or volcanic ash or something like that.
So but, in the actual Underdark, so the Underdark is not just some caverns underground. The Underdark has a... So I'm a huge Underdark buff, okay? So the Underdark is all about atmosphere, okay? When your characters are in the Underdark, if they're in there for more than a couple hours... They start getting paranoid. Dwarves have less of a hard time with this, but something like an elf, which is, you know, a wood elf type character, they start having a really hard time being in the atmosphere of the Underdark for longer than 24 hours, especially. But even after just a couple hours, you know, they start hearing things, and they start hearing water dripping, even though like the walls aren't wet or whatever. They'll see lots of strange glowing phosphorescent mushrooms and lichens and stuff on the walls. They start seeing, you know, optical illusions because of the way that the shadows are kind of bent and funkily, you know, bouncing off the walls, and the torches burn really smokily because it's very damp and musky in there. And so adventuring in the Underdark, a lot of it is about the atmosphere that you throw at your players and that the PCs have to deal with. And one of the things that you can do is make them really paranoid, not like in the game paranoia where they're all paranoid about each other, but just paranoid about every little tiny noise and every little movement that they think they see that isn't really there. And the traps, though, that you set are just going to be similar to all other kinds of traps. They're going to be, you know, like Randall said, if you've got beholders, you're talking about vertical shafts. And beholders are going to, you know, be able to move in and out of those with no problem because they float, okay? And PCs don't float. So you have a huge problem if you have lots of pits, vertical shafts. But you also, you want to make those things interactive. So what you do is you put lots of stalactites and stalagmites around any large cavern with the water that would be needed to make those structures happen. And then you can let them use those in order to get around pits and to escape vertical channels and stuff like that. And, you know, drow are some pretty vile creatures when you start getting into the lower levels, and you're going to run into a bunch of aberrant creatures. And they're going to set traps that are going to cause a lot of pain, but maybe not kill you. So they're going to set traps that are going to trap you so they can come back and feast on you, or come back and steal you and turn you into a mindless, you know, thrall or whatever. So that's the type of thing you're going to do. You're probably not going to see anything especially different than what you might see on the outside world or in a fortress, except that it's way different because you have to set the atmosphere.
So as soon as he said beholder, I have a it's not so much a trap as it is almost like a terrain feature that I've added to dungeons that have beholders in them, and that is enchanted mirrors. And so when you
ask,
well, yeah, you got to throw the mirrors in. I mean, and so basically, like, the beholder sitting in a room where it has like this kind of like master mirror, and so when you go in a room and if you see mirrors on the wall, there's a chance that the beholder, you'll see the beholder's reflection, and he'll be able to, you know, hit you with his eye beam, and it'll keep happening until you break the mirror. And so it's like you're actually fighting the beholder, you know, throughout the entire dungeon until you finally get to the beholder, and you know, so it makes it a little more treacherous. And by the time you get to the beholder, you're pretty pissed off at him anyway. So it makes that end combat a little more rewarding when you finally put it down.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, that's me.
Thoughts, Tracy?
No, I was going to say mirrors. So. Do you have any more?
So mirrors and vertical shafts. I think we're good to go. I also think highly it's a polished set of a crystal. porn set, but that's okay. Vertical shafts and mirrors.
There I mean, you if go. You're, you know, you're talking drow, so you might want to, you know, if you're talking drow, you're also talking spiders and spider webs, and you can have a spider web that has, you know, has water, like it has water in the center of it that has been frozen, and that acts as a shining reflective surface. So it doesn't have to be a traditional mirror, like, oh, someone made a mirror and they hung it there. Like, it can be, you know, use the environment, use the stuff that the creatures that live down there would have available to them to do the same thing as a mirror, or to do the same thing as a pit trap or whatever.
Yep. So, kind of along the same lines as trying to recreate an atmosphere for a particular area, John Green on Twitter as
Hi, John.
H-D-U-R-R.
Yeah.
Huzur. What?
I pronounce it huzur.
Huzur. How do you balance wanting to limit a game for a certain feel or setting versus players who don't want their options limited?
Oh, well, so you don't do that in the game. You do that before the game.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree with that.
And if the player doesn't accept one of your limitations, sometimes you can work with that player and work out a compromise. You know, if for example, the famous example of what is it, no gnomes in Dark Sun or whatever.
See, I thought you were going to say No Player's Handbook 3.
No. So if someone wants to play a gnome in Dark Sun, there's a compromise there. You don't have to have the gnomes as a race in Dark Sun, and you don't have to open that up to every player. But if a player really, really wants to play a gnome for whatever reason, whatever special reason, let them play a gnome. But maybe they're not called gnomes, or maybe they have a background that, you know, they're the product of a human and some other, you know, creature who produced when he or she was born was thought to be human, but ended up being a gnome, right? So, you know, but that's not like a race, but it still allows that player to play that race or a character with those racial characteristics. You're not gonna be able to be a traditional gnome in Dark Sun because there aren't any, and it's not a compromise to just say, okay, I'll let you be a gnome with all of the typical gnome historical things that happen in other settings that have gnomes in their past. You don't have that. That's the compromise, is let that player play a PC with the gnome abilities, but without the gnome background and history. So, I was just going to say, so you talk to the player and try to compromise. Now, if they want too much and it's going to greatly affect your game, it's okay to say no. Tell that player, if they want to play in your game, this is the game you're running. Because the other thing is, you don't want them to be like, oh, okay, fine. And then they're disruptive to your entire game because they're really not happy from the beginning.
See, now you can also use the Land of the Lost option. I don't like to use it, but if a character is dead, or a player is dead set on wanting to play a certain kind of character, and that character does not exist in that world, okay, fine. Through some horrible magical accident or portal or whatever, you have become trapped on this world. Yes, you are a gnome. In the dim past, you remember all the gnomes, and they are from your world, though. But on this world, there are no gnomes, and you will be the only gnome. Please keep that in mind. And it just so happens that on this world, strange curiosities are often kept and put in zoos. So, these are things you might want to consider when playing this character type, or this racial type, or whatever. So,
right. But see, that's still a compromise. That's still what I'm talking about, where they might have that, but there's going to be repercussions in the game because of that.
Right.
And so, you know, they have to, you know, you have to get agreement to that before you start your game.
Okay.
Thaddeus, no input on that one?
Mara. Yeah. No, I think we talked about this a little bit in at Gen Con. You know, I say limit things ahead of time, and it's a lot easier to come to the table with a list of things you can choose. Mm-hmm. It's easier to say no without saying no. So you just give them a list of things that they can choose, and then, you know, you deal with each person who wants a exception on a person by person basis. But you know, if you're the DM and you know that if it's agreed upon in the group that it's your job to create the world and the setting, then they kind of have to play in your game. So.
So I'll also tell you just from my experience, and I only speak for myself, most players, when you limit stuff, if they're upset and they say, well, why are you limiting that? And you give them a good enough reason that it would affect the game, they're going to shrug their shoulders and say, oh, okay, well, then I'll just do something else. You know, and they're going to be happy because they'll make a character still that they want to do. It's just not what they originally maybe thought the game was going to be like, but they're still happy enough with it to play the game, and they're still going to have a good time. They're still going to be a productive, proactive memory of the team. You know what I mean? So it's not, most people don't just have one character concept that they always want to play. And if they don't get to play that, they're just not going to play. They're going to take their ball and go home. And if they're going to do that, then let them take their ball and go home. But most people won't do that because most people just want to play.
Unless it's an all non-human campaign, in which case I'm out. I always play humans, so if there's no humans in the campaign setting, I would have an actual issue with that.
Yeah,
I would be like, really? I'd be like, okay.
I have never heard of a game that ran like that, though. So
I have heard of special elf campaigns and things like that are, you know, all of the players are elves or all of the players are dwarves.
Oh, I've heard of classes, like all the players are wizards or whatever. I mean, but those really long campaigns, though, or is it like a three session campaign?
I got nothing beyond that. I just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my experience has been I left the game as a player because they wanted to play Dark Sun, and, you know, I just didn't, Dark Sun's not my bag, and I didn't want to spend, you know, 8 months or a year playing a game that's not the game I want to play. So it was just, you know, you guys are playing Dark Sun, awesome. You guys have fun with Dark Sun, you know, and I'll find another group. And there you go.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's the better thing anyway, because if you had stayed, you would have been miserable the whole time.
Right. Yeah. No Avengers. Don't give me that crap.
That class doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, whatever. Freaking, I'm wearing my Avengers hoodie right now. You don't tell me that.
Spoilers for 6E. Yeah.
Monty Cook is just writing those as special types of paladins for 5e, right?
Hey, man, I don't care. As long as they're there. They can be paladins all they want, man.
They only roll d4s for everything, though.
Yeah, Thaddeus doesn't care. As long as he gets to roll 2d20, he does not give a crap.
Yeah, well, I don't care if it's 1 point of damage every hit. Just give me my 2d20. Take you out 1 point at a time.
I will avenge you with
what's
this.
The next
I'm gonna make a call and say this will be our last question of the night because it's 10:30 here and I have to go.
10:30. I've seen you, I've talked with you at like 3 in the morning your time, and you're like, yeah, I don't
and, see. And I'm not actually going to bed, but I have worked. So I basically have 3 jobs right now, okay? I'm finishing my research, I'm writing my dissertation, and I'm looking for a job. So unfortunately, gaming and all gaming-related things are being relegated to the last priority.
That's actually fine. So, I've got to study anyway. I've got to find some research, dig up some research, so that's fine.
Do you want to stop here?
I think Randall got dropped. Hold on.
No, one more question.
Randall, are you back?
I'm back.
All right.
Oh, cool. That was going to make it so much faster, too.
No. Yeah. No. So let's do one more question. I'm fine with one more question.
Yeah. I got nothing for love but you for you, buddy. I can't speak right now. I don't
got
know.
Nothing but butt for you, Randall.
Awesome. It's a sad state.
Okay. All right. So, Phil Perrins asked.
Hey, Phil.
I know. I keep forgetting the pause. I don't understand the distinction between combat and roleplay in 4E. Doesn't the stage of combat provide an excellent opportunity to develop character through action and choice?
Yes, and we answered this one too a little bit in at Gen Con. Sorry, I'm having trouble putting my sentences together right now.
I absolutely agree. I think, but I think what happens though is that people get into the habit of having their power cards in front of them and saying, okay, I'm doing this action, now I'm going to roll, and then not adding a roleplay element. And so the distinction, while yes, it is a relatively artificial one, is still real for some people. I agree that talking about it as though there's no distinction and making the point that there's no distinction is a good thing, and that you can have as much roleplay as you want in the middle of combat. In fact, if you're roleplaying where there's even a minor villain that the players are in the same room with while there's a combat going on, that minor villain can be dropping hints and saying things that, you know, if the player's a good player and they're paying attention, they might, after the battle, say, you know, I thought I heard him say such and such, and that'll lead them to the next clue that they need or whatever. Whereas a player who's not paying attention, who's just in the combat and not in the roleplay aspect, might not catch that. Roleplay, there's great opportunities for roleplay in combat, but it's still a distinction that gets made in a lot of groups and by a lot of people.
Yeah. And we talked about it at Gen Con, I think someone asked how to incorporate more roleplay into combat. Mm-hmm. And I'll just restate my answer, is that the DM needs to lead that charge. Like, you need to teach your players. Like, if your players believe that combat and roleplay are two separate things, you have to lead that charge by doing it as the DM. You know, make the monsters and the NPCs actually interact, you know, with the characters as they're fighting, instead of just you know, do the basic, this is what the monster does, now what do you do? You know, you can add story elements into the combat.
Well, so and often... Then, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and then once you start doing that, invite the players to do that, because, you know, there's no expecting people... I don't think there should be any expectation of people to do things if you as the DM aren't already doing it or aren't willing to start participating, so...
Well, is that what happens often, and the reason that there's this break is because when combat starts, suddenly the DM is pulling out a map or dungeon tiles and setting things up, and there is sort of a break between the last kind of maybe more role-playing focused scene and the combat. But it's just like what we were talking about with WoW, is that even though there's that break and you sort of switch to a more tactical sense of the game or whatever, like Thaddeus said, you have to train your players. So just like with WoW, the reason those players play that way or are expecting the game to be that way is because they don't know anything else. So you have to show them the other stuff.
And hit them on the nose with a rolled-up newspaper.
Right, and sick Randall on them, who I've interrupted twice now. Randall?
Well, yeah, I had thought I was going to quote Mike Shea and say, well, role-playing during combat just slows down my combat.
Oh man, the poor guy is not here to defend himself today. We've been a little mean to the
oh come on, like, we all know that's what he would say.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
He would also say players do too, so he's just gonna do the combat
exactly.
All by himself.
He's gonna start the combat. I've made all your rules already beforehand. Here's your list of numbers.
Yeah.
use any of these at any time.
Guys, I do think, though, that the problem with role-playing actual combat moves, mm-hmm. it has a tendency to come off sounding almost like color commentary for a sports event, mm-hmm. which bores the crap out of me. So I would much rather hear someone exclaim or make side comments about a bad guy or about their own predicament during a combat than I would about what they're doing. I don't want to hear, I swing my sword at an elegant angle and do a sidestep, and it's like, no, I don't want to hear that.
Well, you know, just like anything.
I would rather hear something like, oh, crap, these goblins are
that's because it's like anything, in moderation, right? You're not going to expect, you know, when I say role-playing in combat, I don't mean that you expect your players to give a paragraph of description about every single thing they do or everything they see or every thought they're having in the middle of combat. Yeah, that would be Mike Shea saying, oh, that's slowing down combat. Forget it. You're not allowed to do it. But there is a point where every once in a while you throw one of those in and it's nice, right? If they're describing something, you know, like if someone has the tumble, you know, if they're tumbling or whatever, and they describe, you know, something about it once in every two combats or something, that's okay. I mean, it's
And that might add to the scene. Yeah, doing it every time and it mostly becoming repetitious is not fun, of course. But that's also not – I mean, that's part of the kind of role-playing I'm talking about. But part of it is interaction with monsters. The DM also needs to have the monsters do what you just said. The yeah. monsters are going to exclaim. Yeah. The monsters are going to – you know, you just cut this monster's hand off. He's not just a lumbering, oh, okay, you cut my hand off. Now I'm going to try to claw you with my other hand. You know, it's like – you can have some sort of show surprise, show that monster being surprised by suddenly not having a hand. You know, that's part of role playing too. And a lot of what the DM can do is just do a lot of description beforehand to set the scene. And then during the combat, you can just do a few here and there and it's fine.
I had a goblin one time that when the guy stabbed him, the goblin said, "You're such a dick." And died.
Nice.
And it's awesome. I mean, the guys, they were like shocked. The player's like, "What?"
Well, there's also that idea of, you know, trying to get players to do things that are, I can't remember. There was a blogger once that wrote stuff about trying to play big, like, you know, jump off cliffs and jump onto dragons and that kind of stuff like that.
Play boldly?
Yeah, that was it. Who was
Chris Sims?
What dude? Right? I thought it was you.
I read that to you. He wrote the initial article and I talked about it to you on my site.
Okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with kind of leading that by example as well with your monsters. You know, if you want your players to try to use the scenery, you know, use the interactable objects to flavor battle, or just have them be a little more crazy. There's no reason the DM can't lead that charge by you know, make the kobolds jump off a high cliff and try to hit you, even if it means they miss and they splatter on the floor. You know, it's better than just having a bunch of kobolds that just like, okay, he moves three squares and he tries to stab you with a spear, and then so does the other one. It's just like, no, this one finds a rope and he climbs all the way up to the top of it, and that's his whole turn. And everybody's just like, where's he going? And then next round, you know, you just hear screaming goblin come, you know, flying 40 feet straight down, trying to spear you, you know, from above. And, you know, maybe he misses any splats or maybe he hits you. But, you know, you got these monsters who are now playing boldly, and hopefully that'll teach the characters or the players that they can as well. That's such a great idea. I'm so going to have falling kobolds in my next game, just screaming Tracy. From the ceiling.
How about you, Tracy?
I think if you can try to minimize that whole, like Sam was talking about, like suddenly we're pulling out the map and we're changing things to go into combat, it starts to feel like video games. Final Fantasy did this a lot, where it just felt different. Like it changed how the scene was and everything. If you can minimize that, I think that'll help a lot. I'm a little worried with like the word rank skill system, that this will make it even more abundantly clear that skills and roleplay are just totally different from combat, but we don't know enough about what they're talking about to know that for sure.
Yeah, I did it. I eliminated perception, so.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Did you not read my blog post?
I read part of it. I can't indignation. Remember.
Can you hear it? Can you hear it on the mic, guys? Indignation.
Hey, well, did your wife even follow me?
Yes, she does now because I told her to.
I know. That was funny this morning.
You know,
but
you know,
yeah,
Randall,
I by way of describing the scene. Yeah,
Randall, I think you're the star of tonight's podcast. You danced and sang. You jumped up and down in your seat. You totally just gave Tracy the what for. I mean, this is just classic Randall.
Superstar.
I did read it. It's just been a little while. I have a lot on my mind. I must figure out skills.
No, they're not. Yeah. We never used to have them.
I super focused last week on... I had like 3 articles on skills. I gotta change up stuff.
Jeez.
Yeah.
little fixation there, huh?
Oh.
That's all right. I've been fixating on solo campaigns, so...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Also on my blog, initiativeorwhat.com. That's initiativeorwhat.com.
Well, I was just about to ask, what's everybody been up to this last couple weeks?
solo campaigns.
Yeah?
Yeah. And it's also the beginning of the cycle, so some of us are writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tried my hand at writing some Pathfinder spells, so that we'll see how that goes.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah.
And Sam's basically working three jobs.
Yep. Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, I have really, literally, I don't get to go on Twitter. I'm not even at my computer half of the day anymore. And when I am, I'm so focused on other stuff. I just don't. I try to read articles at night so that I'm sort of up with the D&D stuff, but I feel myself falling ever more behind. But you know, that's okay. It's worth it, so.
Sam, every time I think about you, I think of those like films that we used to see in grade school with the scientists in the white lab coats going up and down the aisles, you know, and there's like, sponsored by DuPont, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like, that's Sam! Sam is like totally doing the science thing. It's awesome! So.
Yeah. Well, it's not as, it's glorified by, much like lawyering, it's glorified by television, and most of what you do is paperwork and boring.
That's so, pretty much every job, I think.
That's every job, yeah. Yeah. So don't be fooled, kids. Even though the DuPont scientists looked awesome, yeah, don't be
you
fooled.
You should totally do a Muppet Labs shtick, though. That would be awesome. You are Dr. Bunsen Honeydew.
Yeah. I'll just start talking like Beaker. Anyway. Yeah. So Thaddeus, what have you been doing?
What are you doing?
I got a 3-year-old Dungeons and Dragons blog shut down over the week. That was fun.
What?
I am apparently a villain this week. What
happened?
I haven't heard this. What's going on?
Is this the group that was stealing stuff?
Yeah, it was Dragon and Dangerous dot something or other, and I I've got a lot of new stuff going on at my website. I should say it's our website. It's there's a lot of new authors coming in, the IDDM and Glimmering Gnome and Matthew CC came back, and then we were StufferShack.com's site of the month for October.
Ooh. Oh, cool.
Yeah,
nice.
That's our first like award kind of thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. Next up, Ennies. I was tracking our stats, and I noticed that this website was starting to give us a lot of hits, and which kind of sucks because you know, now it's gone. So they were throwing us 80 or 90 hits a day. So I was just like, "Oh, what is this? What's going on here?" And so I clicked the link, and then I found the entire article that one of the authors on the site had written was posted on the site, images and all. And I was like, "Well, that's kind of weird." I mean, we have a Creative Commons license, you know, share and share alike, but they have to ask for permission first, and they have to, you know, attribute it back to the site. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do either of those things. And so then I looked through the entire site, and they were pulling like DDI stuff. Like they had ripped off Wizards of the Coast and a bunch of other D&D blogs, and they were just straight posting their articles, art content and all, on the website. And so, yeah, I wrote them an email, and they never wrote me back. And so I wrote their,
service provider
saying, you know, hey, this guy's stealing content from my website. I want it pulled down. But worse yet, you might want to look into it because they're stealing content from Wizards of the Coast and they're, you know, a subsidiary of Hasbro. And I don't think this one is going to go over very well if they find out about it. And, mm-hmm. you know, by the next morning, it was gone. And I got an email saying there's an open ticket and they're looking into it, but I never heard back from them. So
yeah. Well, so when this happened, I was telling Thaddeus this actually happened to RPG Musings when I first started it, but mm-hmm. it wasn't as slick of a show because they were stealing my content, but not any pictures. So and then they didn't keep formatting. So when I went to the link to their website, I saw my post posted by one of their people, but with no formatting whatsoever. So it looked like it was horrible.
Just crap, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And I got really pissed off. And I was able to find out who the owner was, and I could email them directly. And they sent me a response. He's like, I'm sorry, I do own that website, but I didn't know they were doing this. And they took all my stuff down. But yeah, so
It happens.
Yeah, this...
But this was much more egregious.
Yeah, and this website apparently has been around since September of 2008. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. They just got them yanked from the internet, though.
So you think that makes you a villain or a hero? Because you said villain earlier, but I mean,
well, I mean, if it could have just been. You know, like, take down the content that you're stealing, you know, leave your blog up, that's fine.
Right, but what if that left nothing?
Right? Well, I mean, they have. I went through the site, and there it seemed like a lot of stuff was original content. Mm-hmm. It looks like over the last few months, they just kind of got lazy and just started aggregating instead of... But anyway, it's just, I don't know. I feel bad for getting somebody's blog kind of just bombed off the internet, but at the same time, you know, don't steal. I would have been more than happy to let somebody repost my stuff, especially with the traffic I was getting from them. It's just like, mm-hmm. awesome, fine, you know. Keep,
well,
but,
yeah.
Ask and attribute.
That's what it is, yeah. Ask the person and then, you know, give a citation for where it's coming from with a really obvious link and, you know, no big deal.
And that's my stuff. I mean, that's only stuff that I write that I'm okay with. You know, if you ask me, I'm going to go to whoever wrote it. You know, if somebody wants to post the Star Frontier stuff, mm-hmm. I'm going to go to Randall. And I'm going to say, Randall, dude, this guy wants to host, you know, repost your stuff on his site. Are you cool with that? And if Randall's like, no, man, you know, I wrote it for that one site. And if it's not that site, it's my site. Then screw it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to let him have it. That's how it goes. Because these guys put in work and effort, and it's, you know, it's their content. It's hosted on my site, so that means it's copyrighted by me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if at any time they don't want their stuff on my site or they don't want it somewhere else, I'm going to adhere to that. So,
yeah.
But anyway, that's me trying to burn down the internet like Tracy, but I only do it one site at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Well, I have to head
coming
out.
Coming for you next, so... Sarah, darkmagic.com.
Yeah. Because she's stealing material from. Oh wait.
Pretty sure Tracy's website has armed guards. So.
Well, it's got that thing up top. I mean, that's kind of scary looking.
The thing what is that up thing? Top.
You don't have it. It doesn't have a name.
This is just a template. I didn't even.
Are you kidding? I thought that was something that you would like design or had designed. I was like, wow, that's pretty badass.
No, it's just a template. Funny.
That just completely ruined the
mystique.
Well, I was, yeah, that mystique. I was going to say the illusion of SarahDarkMagic.com for me. Just.
All right, guys, I have to run. So.
Okay.
All right.
And since I'm recording, that means the recording stops. But that doesn't mean the conversation has to stop. It just means I won't be part of it.
Good night, everyone.
So, yeah, good night, everyone.
Well, you're hosting the call, so it does mean the conversation ends.
Can you switch the host? Is there a way to switch the host? See, now that would be a good feature.